Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Third Stream View here on BBS Radio for Monday evening, October 25th, soon to be Tuesday, October 26th. I'm Fred Bedali. I'm your host for the next hour. I hope you'll enjoy what I have to talk about, my views, some of my ideas. And I'd also, before we get going, I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce my show, and especially for his advice. And please stay tuned, because after my show, Don's show, Evident Footprints, follows mine. And as always, he has some very interesting things to talk about, and he enjoys taking your calls. Back to my show, Third Stream View. First of all, I'd like to thank BBS Radio for the opportunity to present my views to you. And second, I want all of you to know that I'm a virgin. Yes, I'm a virgin, because all of this is new to me, as I've never hosted a radio show. So I ask you to please bear with me as I, you know, try to find my stride. I've always wanted a good forum for what I have to say, and so I'm very happy to be here saying it now. I chose the name Third Stream View, and that's stream. There was an error on the schedule. It's scream. It's Third Stream View. I chose that name because of all the talking heads I ever see and hear on radio, sorry, TV and radio, are, you know, they're the usual left and right paradigm, always excluding the third point of view or the third party point of view. And I feel that in this way, the corporate pro-Zionist media opinion cartel keeps the one government party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings, firmly entrenched within the status quo. So in other words, they are two sides of the same coin, and they agree on most everything except how much to spend. Well, folks, I aim to change all of that with my usual blunt, concise, to-the-point observations, criticisms, and solutions. Now, I've been in the libertarian movement since 1980, and I've always felt it's long overdue for our third-stream voices to have a permanent seat at the table with the status quo talking heads, which was all we get on radio and TV, especially on Sundays, the same, you know, usually the same left-right paradigm. Same tired voices, the same tired crowd they have on there. It's, you know, you can just about predict it. So here, I'll be weaving together history, economics, philosophy, and political science mixed in with my good humor, my bad humor, and of course my tasteless humor, combined with my razor-sharp wit, my sarcasm, and the lampooning of all so many politicians and bureaucrats. And of course, all of this is wrapped up in my humility. I can guarantee you that I always will speak truth to power. I can't be bought, and I am not beholden to any special interest group or groups. So on my show, there is no political correctness or censorship, because I always reject these following types of censorship, which include the usual tired accusations of racism, anti-Semitism, hate speech, conspiracy theory, and unpatriotic. Those terms will not be thrown around on my show to silence dissent or debate. And I especially am fond of objective, intellectual, revisionist history. And revisionist history is not afraid of criticism, investigation, and all these sort of things to arrive at the details that court historians or conveniently leave out, because as we know, the winner usually writes the history book, you know, written by the victors. So we have that to, you know, look forward to. I have a background in economics, history, especially Austrian economics. I'm rather self-taught in a lot of this stuff. Since I'm a college dropout, the guilt I've carried is that I continue to study and read, where other people, they got their diploma. Okay, I know they're getting on with life and their jobs and careers and families. I understand all that. But for me, it's been this sort of little guilt thing I have. So I've always been interested in reading about economics, history, and politics, and which brought me towards the libertarian movement. And then I discovered Austrian economics, the Austrian school of economics, especially as exemplified by Karl Menger, Ludwig von Mises, Friedrich Hayek, Murray Rothbard, Henry Hazlitt, Frederick Bastiat. These are my heroes. A lot of these types are my heroes, of who are economists, historians, philosophers. That's what I have in me, and that's what I try to bring forth. And I forget who said what sometimes, but I'm acknowledging all these mentors of mine. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, and I'm proud to be able to bring this view forward, because it needs to be heard. And I'm just so tired of the usual stuff on talk radio and again the talking heads or the major networks, Fox and CNN. As far as the conservatives, I do agree with, we are in agreement sort of often about, you know, economics or business, but on foreign policy and civil liberties, we're usually far apart, especially on foreign policy, and which is something I especially want to talk about. And before I get going on this, because people question one's patriotism, people question this and this and that, so let me be clear about my definition of patriotism, which should be everyone's, not because I know what's best for everyone, but if we look at patriotism objectively, it's not about waving the flag or the 4th of July. For me, my patriotism is not for towards any temporary occupant of the White House. My patriotism, which I hope your patriotism is, my patriotism is towards the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. Therefore, I would say that the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party, that is the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, is where the Republican Party should be. Unfortunately, Republican Party and even the Tea Party are heavily infiltrated by neoconservatives, or neocons as we call them. And for those of you who have heard this term who may not know about it, the neocons pretty much control talk radio. They control Fox News. They sort of historically come from the left, sort of Trotskyites, and they became neoconservatives, where they generally accept the welfare state as long as they're running it, which, you know, gives us the conservative welfare state. And years ago, Ayn Rand, or Ayn Rand herself, said that well, I'm not equating fascism with conservatism or neoconservatives per se, but Ayn Rand said that the fascism is not opposed to the welfare state, and I think that is so true. So what the problem with I see with the Tea Party is that they either don't know or don't want to acknowledge and realize that the warfare state, the military budget, our two wars are bankrupting our nation just as much as the welfare state side. And until they come to that realization, to me, they're just not getting it. And nowhere in the Constitution does it say America is supposed to have an empire. We are supposed to have a defense. Clearly, we're supposed to have a defense. That's one of the federal government's main duties, and I don't have a problem with that. But when they have over 700 military bases in over 140 countries, no wonder those people are pissed off. And it's a drain. It's such a drain on our country. And since I'm a capitalist, so many of these defense firms, the whole military-industrial congressional complex, is sucking away precious investment capital for consumer goods and other things that we need. So this is where I'm coming from. And as Ron Paul would say, we can't look at the domestic problems until we see what our overseas commitments are. And if that's $1 trillion a year, that's $1 trillion going down a government rat hole of corporate welfare and you know, special interests and just such a convoluted mess. Well, I'd like to think I have a lot of answers and solutions for this mess and getting out of it. And that's one reason I want to talk about that. I'll be jumping around to many different things, and I certainly welcome your calls. And I also want you to know, and this is my cheeky sort of way of saying this, is that, and I think our overseas listeners will especially appreciate this, is that I'm an American who actually knows world geography. I actually know world history. I actually know that there is a big world outside of our borders. And last but not least, I know that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world. And now we're facing all this foreign competition, the rise of China, you know, all these things that are happening. Well, you know, things are changing. Change is the only constant. And high taxes and obsessive regulations have made us less competitive. This country has serious emphysema. We're on the ropes. Unemployment is much higher than they say it is. The war is much more tragic than they say it is. The cost, the whole deal, it's just a nightmare. So I will also be vigorously supporting the concept of nullification, where states just say to Washington, well, you know what? We're going to nullify these laws because they're unconstitutional, and we're just not going to abide. We've had it. You're just piling on more regulations for us, more unfunded liabilities, you know, more taxes. We say no. And for me, of course, the next step is the case for secession. I'm all for secession. In fact, Thomas Jefferson himself said something to the effect of that he could see America in the future breaking off into several republics, and he wished them well. So I have no problems with that. And, you know, Washington cannot control everything. You know, all politics is local. All poverty is local. All crime is local. You know, all the states are completely capable of doing this themselves. We forget that it's the states that made the federal government, not the other way around. So I'm getting into a lot of things, a lot of deep things, and I don't want to go too fast, but I have a lot on my mind, and there's some basic things that really need fixing. And I've invited my friend Don Nikoloff to be on, was one of my first guests, and help me move things along as I get used to this interesting concept and as I try to, you know, find my pace. I'm excited about the possibilities that this has, and I hope that I can make a change in the world, if not people's minds, and get them thinking that, wow, you know, there are other ways to look at things that have nothing to do with more government, more taxes, more socialism or collectivism of all stripes. And with that, I want to say hello to Don. Are you there, my friend?
Yes, I am, Fred, and you're doing an excellent job.
Am I doing a good job so far?
Yeah, great, great. I mean, you're clearly stating your position on some issues. You're speaking very honestly and openly about yourself and how you perceive things, and that's to be commended.
Well, thank you. And do you know how I happen to practice a lot of this stuff?
And actually, I don't. In front of your mirror in the bathroom?
Well, as you know, I have good looks, but that's not the issue here. I practice to talk radio when talk radio is talking. If I disagree, especially, again, it's usually foreign policy or civil liberties, and if I'm watching Fox or CNN or those shows, CNBC, I'm giving my answer constantly to these talking heads, and that's how I practice. So that's why I welcome calls, and I don't want to cut people off. I don't want to let them have their say, and we're going to go to some taboo subjects, I'm sure, later on, and as this show develops, things that we're not really supposed to talk about, but we will, and because there are no sacred cows in my world, and Obama talked about transparency. Well, he might not be delivering it, but I will. So,
are you running for the next?
Well, I should election. Be the I should be the leader of the Tea Party. I'm available if they want me, but I'd have to put the hammer down on a few concepts. The Tea Party really needs a good leader. I don't see a leader. I know they're a just diverse group of people who have different ideas and this and that. I laugh at the racism part of it. If anything, the Tea Party needs more black faces. And I don't mean people in blackface. I mean black faces, Asian faces, Latin faces. You should have a lot more people. Because, for example, the few black folks I do see at these rallies or on YouTube for the Tea Party, they're the ones that get it about the big spending. They're the ones that understand it. And you know, I certainly resent the fact that Obama's handlers and the crowd, people on the left, they've tried to frame the argument so that any criticism of Obama is automatically racism or a hatred, and that just ain't the point. People are fed up with his policies. I would bet your life on it, Don, that if Obama was an albino, or no matter what race or color his skin or religion, whatever, wherever he was born, If he advocated those same policies, he'd be disliked just as much. It ain't a racial thing. It's a philosophical thing. It's a policy thing. And that's why I didn't vote in 08, because I couldn't stand Obama. I knew what would happen with this guy. And I couldn't stand McCain either. So I just laid out. And they say if you don't vote, you don't have the right to bitch. Well, like that makes a difference. Okay, I voted. Now I'm bitching. You know, I haven't changed the world. To me, it doesn't make that much of a difference. And I've been asked in the past if I'd run for some sort of office. And I used to think about it that way. But I think I could do more through media like this in the long run. More damage, too. Good damage, if you will. So that's how I see things. And I hope to develop a good following. And of people who are seeing the world as I do through a limited government point of view, and with the ethics of liberty and individual rights, which this country was founded upon. And actually, America is really only successful for two basic reasons, which I got from reading Ludwig von Mises. And that is, America started out with very small government and very small taxes and regulation. Well, without those obstacles in the way, entrepreneurs, businessmen, people were allowed to, or they were able to accumulate more capital to invest, and they weren't dragged down by so much regulation. Well, over time, you know, it's really gone way the other way. We're heavily overregulated, heavily overtaxed. No wonder a lot of businesses are going overseas. This is part of the problem that I see, and I'm not interested in taxing people more or over-regulating people. Like I said, our nation's economy has emphysema, and it's on the ropes. And everything Obama's doing, you know, I would basically do the opposite. He's doing everything I wouldn't do, especially when we have the benefit today of knowing history of the Depression. I mean, my goodness, if he would have read Murray Rothbard's America's Great Depression, he'd have a serious insight on how that came down, and how the Fed had probably 98% to do with that too, as the Fed has caused this problem.
Yeah, well, you're touching upon something here that really leads us to the crux of the matter. My research has demonstrated that we've been infiltrated. Now, when you question why our jobs are being shipped overseas, and who, what American would do that? Well, the answer is these aren't Americans do that. These are infiltrators. And those compromised by the infiltrators. And it's all done covertly, secretly, corruptly, and they all profit from it.
Okay, well, yeah, I see that. Now, we might not be talking about the same people, but the way I see it is these people have perverted capitalism and the free enterprise system. They have pushed it into crony capitalism, bailouts, subsidies, and protectionism. That's the problem I see. In the economic philosophy that we libertarians, we advocate, we are not pro-business per se. We are pro-free enterprise.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the other part of that dichotomy, isn't it?
Yes, but the globalists aren't. If it supports their aims, they're pro-free enterprise, and they talk like they are, but they don't live like they are. They don't, you know, they don't advocate the things that give us the greatness of a true competitive free market system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's all by design intended to make huge profits for those that benefit from these secret programs and backdoor dealings that go on.
Yeah, and a lot of this has always gone on, and I'd like to put a stop to it by without, you know, Obama, for example, they always want more regulation. More regulation will solve everything. Well, you know, who protects us from the regulators? If I laid out some guidelines, and I think this is very important what I'm going to mention now, I'm laying out the guidelines for a true, honest, free market, free enterprise system. And that is not to be confused with what Bush and Obama have done. In a true free market system, there is no barriers to market entry. There is no government interference with free trade. There is no tax-funded bailouts. You'll like these next two, and so will America. No bank is too big to fail. No business is too big to fail. You see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
And these are the clearly defined ideals that I think need to be instituted to put us on the right track. And because capitalism and free market capitalism, free enterprise system, is the most moral and productive system ever designed. It's not the perfect system, but it's the best thing we could have based on what we have. And again, it doesn't allow this government protection of, their politically protected businesses and industries.
Well, we're supposed to have checks and balances, are we not, between the various divisions of what represents government. And it seems that the judicial branch is willing to overlook any criminality as long as somebody is benefiting financially from it.
Right, right. Now, I'm not against profits. You know, profits are good. In fact, let me give a definition of profit. And I didn't learn this stuff in business or business school or in high school. I didn't learn it in economics. I didn't learn it in business. I learned this later on in my own study. And here's a definition of profit that I really, really like. The profit is that part of the price that consumers are willing to reward businessmen and entrepreneurs for the risks that they take, the investments that they make, and the products and services that they create. How do you like that?
Yeah, I might add, as long as it's done honestly.
Well, of course.
And openly.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When you restrict entry to markets, or you give protectionism to certain industries, that is part of the dishonesty that distorts the whole market system, because companies have to be allowed to fail. And just the fact that competitors, if they're not prohibited from entering a market, that causes the established firms to keep their prices and wages, at levels that aren't based on excluding competitors. So that those market forces alone will keep it honest. But government gives privilege to the politically connected businesses. Now, a lot of these businesses, and even the Republican Party of years ago, of the past, they've supported government regulation. They've even staffed some of the regulatory agencies with their own people. Because what happens is big business, and I'm not anti-big business per se, but the businesses with their armies and lawyers and accountants, they can weather these regulations and all this stuff more easily because they know it harms their competitors or would-be upstart competitors. So these are the things that I want to reform. If I was a great reformer, these are the things that I would do. Let me name a few more, Don.
Sure.
Oh, and let me also say that when I say that no bank is too big to fail and no business is too big to fail, okay, well, there's a trade-off. So I would detax most of these companies. I would just give them, like, say, a 2% corporate tax. That way the liberals won't wet their pants completely because they'll know that business is paying some tax. But the trade-off that I would give industry and individuals is micro-taxes and micro-regulations, very, very small taxes and regulations, just enough to fund what's in each state's constitution and even the federal constitution. So let me add a few more things to in terms of economics and what would clean up this the perversion of capitalism, if you will. I would say no tax-funded subsidies for business and labor, no monopolistic political privilege for doctors and lawyers, no government fixing of wages and prices, no state capitalism, no corporate socialism. In fact, all these defense contractors in these wars, I mean, they're all paid from the tax trough. You know, they're not having to earn it in a competitive market system. So there's so much being spent on defense that's really offense that it's sucking money away from our own economy. A few more things. No hemp prohibition, no protectionism, no mandatory union membership, no tax-funded farm welfare, no tax-funded sports welfare, nor there should be no tax-funded science welfare, no tax-funded arts welfare. All these things people should be free to spend their own money on. We don't need the farmers getting paid not to grow crops. How ridiculous is that? Cut their taxes, make their property taxes micro, and let them farm. Let them be the great farmers that they should be. There's also should be no government-owned and operated postal service. That should be an open competition. That years ago they wanted to maybe sell it or give it to the employees. That they should have done it years ago, and now it's running a huge deficit. And if Don Nikoloff wants to deliver first-class mail, he goes to jail. I don't know how many people know that. It's illegal to deliver first-class mail. So, you know, free enterprise, void, were prohibited by law.
Yeah, well, I don't want to deliver first-class mail. So
I know you don't, but how many people know they'll go to jail if they did? So, you know, and this is the country that's supposed to be pro-capitalism and free enterprise. I think it needs some serious reform. Let me add a couple more. No, and I think a lot of our listeners will like this. No government-enforced FDA-AMA pharmaceutical triangle monopoly. So in a free enterprise system, yes, the pharmaceuticals would still exist, but they could never lobby government to exclude or harass alternative and holistic medicine, you know, the whole vitamin supplements industry, the manufacturers of alternative medical equipment. They will not, they should not be persecuted or harassed. If anybody does something to harm others as a business or whatnot, that's subject to the courts to deal with. And you know, that's how I see that. And with the internet and the media, I mean, news travels in a split second. If you build a faulty product, everybody knows right away. So your reputation is, you know, seriously at stake. A couple more. No persecution or harassment of alternative medicine. No persecution or harassment of alternative energy. How about this one? No irresponsibility encouraging government-subsidized flood insurance. That's another big thing. People want to live near the sea or near rivers, and, you know, what are we supposed to do? Bail them out every time Mother Nature kicks their butt? I mean, it seems like there comes a time where, you know, hey, you know, you gotta take a look here and see what's going on. We can't live in this floodplain and expect the rest of America to bail us out every time. So, you know, that's another thing I mentioned. No government-controlled mandatory health care. And here's one of my favorites. No tax-funded foreign aid. Americans would be free to send a check. They can write a check wherever charity they want to help, domestic or overseas. They're encouraged to do that. But we're not going to take your taxes and do it. Besides, none of that is listed in the Constitution. And here's one of my favorites. No government ownership of sports complexes, airports, convention centers, trains, radios, or, you know, radio or TV stations. The funny thing about Obama is this guy, I'm sort of asking this in a question, this guy taught constitutional law, question mark, and about 99% of the things that he advocates and wants to do are not even contained in the Constitution. So, you know.
Yeah, that's just a rumor.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just a rumor, and you know the extent of the research I've done there.
Yeah.
How can he hold a law degree from schools he didn't attend?
Don, okay. Even if he attended them, and he's advocating the same things.
Yes.
where does he get off? I mean, even Bush did a lot of this, but Obama especially. You know, I wish somebody would ask me what I think about Obama.
I'm going to ask you in a moment here.
Okay.
He's scheduled to go to India. Now you have to ask the question, why India? He's scheduled to go to India from November 4th through November 6th. He's booking or has already reserved over 500 rooms. He's going to be taking over the Taj Mahal.
Is he taking his wife?
I don't know all the details on that.
When you said all those rooms, I figured she was coming along with her entourage. Sorry, you know, well, what? I went to Spain, you know.
It's insanity what's going on. It could cost as much, when it's all over, said and done, it could cost as much as $1 billion for a trip to India.
Well, now he's throwing around trillions like it's nothing. So I guess we could live with $1 billion, can't we?
Yeah. You know, not to digress, there's a story I want to share with you because you can tie this into all the other infringements on our rights, especially our civil rights.
Right.
And this is something that he professes to be fighting for, especially for the downtrodden. I sent you a link, in fact, to this article. It's from WorldNet Daily. Uh-huh. There's a woman in Michigan, 31-year-old single woman, who posted a note on her church bulletin board last week seeking a Christian roommate to share her home. Now, it doesn't detail in the in the story whether this person's even going to pay rent. But she has been cited by the state of Michigan for violating the Fair Housing Act by discriminating against those of other faiths. Now, let's just look at this on the surface. Imagine that she ran the ad and said that she preferred a roommate who didn't have a rape record, or she preferred a roommate that wasn't of any particular sexual persuasion. Let's say she wanted someone who was straight.
Uh-huh.
She wanted someone who didn't have a criminal record. She wanted somebody who could speak English.
How dare her?
Someone who was legally and lawfully in the United States. I mean, she could detail all kinds of things. She could say, I prefer redheads because I can't stand looking at blondes or brunettes. She can say anything she wants. That's her freedom of speech. And they're trying to take away freedom of speech, freedom of expression, but they're particularly attacking her on her Christian faith. She is not a government agency. She's not subsidized, at least as much as we know, in the paying of her rent. And she may own the home. She may just decide to make ends meet that she needs a roommate to help pay some of the bills. That's a win-win situation if you find the right person.
Right.
If someone has now access to a nice home or apartment, someone who may not be able to get one on their own. So as long as this person is complying with the restrictions on the lease agreement or on the, if it's a mortgage, it's nobody's business.
Yeah.
But just because she posted this on the church bulletin board, this is being treated as discrimination. And if we lie down and just let this go by without saying anything about it, without speaking the truth, and I just gave some examples.
When you say the bulletin board, you mean like an internet bulletin board?
No, this is right there at the church. You know, you post a little post-it note or take a thumbtack and put it in a business card or whatever, you know.
Well, I have a solution. I'm surprised you overlooked it. Don't you realize that the Michigan economy is so strong that it gives them the right to do all this micromanaging because their stuff is so strong? Unemployment is very low in Michigan.
Yeah.
Well, here's that nullification word. Nullify that stupid Federal Housing Act, all that crap. It's worked against people. It's, you know, probably caused housing shortages. And again, they're intervening in the economy and distorting the market process.
Yes.
Now, it's ridiculous.
Imagine she ran the ad and said, you know, I will only accept a psychopathic roommate. So therefore, you must show me adequate proof that you've been detained in a mental institution for the past 20 years. And you've been released on some sort of follow-up recognizance and continued therapy while you're out in the world. That would be discriminating against everyone who was sane.
Yeah, I know. Well, government is just so out of control at all levels. I'll tell you what, I mean, if this lady wanted to rent to whoever she wanted to and the feds sent people in there, if I was a sheriff of that town, I'd arrest those federal bastards. Or if I was a sheriff, you know, police chief, I'd arrest them and I'd confront the federal government. And there needs to be more of that going on because the people are fed up.
Yes. Now, this is the type of ideology, political and social ideology, promoted by the guy I affectionately call the short-legged Mac Daddy, Barack Obama.
Did you get Mac Daddy from the preach?
That's from Pastor Reverend.
I like him.
James David Manning.
Yeah, I like him. I disagree with him about Israel and Zionism, but I like his other observations. And you know, it just in a nutshell. I mean, talking about black folks, it's not. I don't hate black folks. I don't da 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 da. But it's the behavior he's talking about. I mean, Bill Cosby should have said what he said, in the last few years, 40 years ago. It's a behavioral thing, and for them to uphold, this whole gangster, this hood mentality, that's so self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
For black folks, as is, it's so ignorant for those who are doing this. Those black folks. or especially probably the younger ones, who are putting down black kids who are going to school and getting education, calling them white. Well, you know, slavers used to not teach black folks how to read or write or let them have, you know, and now they have a disdain for education. Talk about shooting themselves in the foot. Mm-hmm. That's an awful thing. So, and the drug war, my goodness, you talk about making some serious cuts. Nobody knows where to cut. Cut that $1 trillion failure that, you know, Nixon increased the war on drugs. We're talking about war. Can you tell me, America's fighting these other wars that people don't really think about: the war on cancer, the war on poverty, the war on drugs, the war on tobacco, the war on AIDS, war on crime. They're just throwing billions down a government rat hole. Please, anybody, tell me which one of those wars we've won.
Well, they're all by design. They were created just as smoke screens for getting their paws on more money.
And speaking of money, do you know who the big addicts are, Don? Here's I heard this last year. I think a pretty cool way of looking at it. You know who the real addicts are, Don? The cops.
Tell me.
The cops, the DEA, the politicians and bureaucrats, they're addicted to the drug war for the extra money it's bringing into them, for the asset forfeitures, for all this kind of stuff that the drug war has caused. So they don't want to give it up. It's, you know, fattened them up, too. And, you know, all the more reason to get rid of it. It's a complete failure. We'd be much better off if they re-legalized all drugs for adults. And, in fact, the pharmaceuticals could manufacture them. They'd be free of impurities with dosage recommendations. And then right now you can't sue a pusher. It's in a pusher's best interest to get everybody hooked. And something I learned from reading Ron Paul over 20 years ago, who's a medical doctor, and I think you'll find is quite interesting, is that when you look at the illegal market, you get harder drugs. Well, you know, there used to be cocaine, then there was, you know, smoking cocaine, freebasing, crack cocaine. Now there's crystal meth and all these other horrific things. The illegal market gives us harder drugs, more dangerous things. When you look at the legal market, wow, lo and behold, what do you have? Wish you could see my gestures right now. They're very cool. Anyway, the legal market, what do you have? You have low salt, no fat, low nicotine, no nicotine, you know, all these moderation type things in the legal market. But it's just the opposite in the hard drug market. Illegal drugs, and even people who abhor illegal or hard drugs, their lives are still in danger because of getting shot in the crossfire, thefts to home invasions to provide for drug habits and all this sort of thing. So the drug war has its tentacles deeply into American society. Look what's happening in Mexico now. In the last year, over 28,000 people killed. Don, that's half the Vietnam War losses that the GIs took.
Well, yeah.
In 2 years.
In a sense, you're very accurate.
Well, I usually am.
Consider what's going on in Afghanistan. This is about controlling the poppy fields.
You mean Vietnamistan?
this is a tremendous cash cow for the military-industrial complex and the pharmaceutical companies.
Don, the CIA needs money that Congress won't give them. They need to run drugs. CIA, cocaine importation agency.
Yeah, exactly. So it's always an Hegelian dialectic as far as what's going on. They tell us one thing, and they're supplying the drug dealers. Where are the drug dealers getting this money from from?
It's so staged. It's so staged. And, and meanwhile, the evil marijuana growers, re-legalized. And you notice I use the word re-legalized because it was legal till 1937. And then, whoosh, all of a sudden it was illegal. And look at the mess it's caused ever since then. An analogy would be, only government could take a valuable commodity like paper, slap some green ink on it, and make it worthless. And only government could take a very cheap, inexpensive, dirt cheap weed, make it illegal, and make it worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, you're talking about illegal drugs now.
I'm talking about marijuana. Making marijuana illegal, for example. Or the other drugs. I mean, let's talk about marijuana. You make that illegal, you make it worth its weight in gold.
Well, you go back to the founding fathers, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, and John Quincy Adams, all of those guys were hemp farmers. It was law. They had to grow hemp.
Right. Well, I wouldn't make it law, but yeah, they did grow hemp, which is the first cousin to marijuana. And that's part of my thing for the environment. You know, you'd have a massive hemp farms providing many things, but they're not allowed to do that. In other words, free enterprise, void where prohibited by law. And it's usually government stands in the way of free enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And those who can tweak the levers of government the best, you know, are the ones that benefit. And that's what we have. When I hear government industry partnerships, I want to run the other way. That's scary. That's not a good thing.
Yeah. Now, speaking of drugs, and I guess you could say to an extent, alcohol is a drug as well.
In fact, it's the gateway drug. Did you know that?
The gateway to where?
to other drugs. It's not marijuana. Alcohol is the gateway drug.
Yeah. Well, you again, the short-legged Mac Daddy is being described as very depressed, narcissistic, of course, but very depressed. And
since his numbers are depressed,
unstable, actually unstable. So you have to ask about Larry Sinclair's revelations of homosexual dalliances and the smoking of crack cocaine, but also the drinking. And there are some very interesting YouTubes out there. I don't know if you've seen some of them, but
Don, let me be clear here. I want you to know that these accusations are not correct, but I am feeling some depression as to my popularity numbers. And I think that they will improve shortly after the election. I'm working on my Obama impression.
Yeah.
And do you know why?
I'm glad you told me. I thought it might have been Sarah Palin, but no.
No. I'm working on my Obama impression because he's going to have an epiphany.
You think so, huh?
Well, because you know why? Because I went to Party City, Don, last week.
Party City?
I bought an Obama mask.
For Halloween, you're saying, huh?
No. No, that's just it. It's not for Halloween. I have plans for it. And you've already seen the one government party with two head costume I have. Two heads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, now I am working on my Obama impression. The mask will be worn at a podium, and I will attest to the fact that it's difficult to say, but I have been going down the wrong path, and I will make amends.
I can't wait to see this.
I'd like to get on YouTube. Yes. I have a few other things coming on.
Well, Fred, now there's some other things that you should tell your listeners about your background in music, because I know some of your shows are going to be music-oriented, are they not?
I guess so. I'll have it sort of weaving in and out. I've been a drummer for, gosh, I'm giving away about 40 years. You know, some people, I could say I've been a musician for 40, you know, I've been a musician all these years, but since I'm a drummer, you know, I've had to go with those, endure those drummer jokes all my life, which I know you know them. You know, how do you tell when there's a drummer knocking at your door? It slows up or it speeds down the knocking, you know. So I've had to endure all the drummer jokes, but I've made that a strength. So, you know, a drummer hangs out with musicians. So, yes, and I have my own band. It's a 10-piece horn band, and I love rhythm and blues music especially. In fact, that's one of the things I'm most proud about America is American music, which happens to be welcome throughout the world pretty much. You know, American music, jazz, soul, country, blues, disco, funk, rock and roll. It's very big outside of our country, and it's one of the things I'm most proud of, and something we take for granted. So I'm glad that I'm able to play music.
Yes. Now, some may take offense to the fact that you didn't mention rap and hip hop, but we're rapping right now, aren't we?
That's right. And I must say that I'm not very big on those two, because as a person who grew up listening to black music, you know, I used to listen to the soul stations. We always look forward to the next great black, you know, the next album by the Temptations, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and all these great bands. And these black groups of the past, they sang and wrote about social problems, poverty, you know, despair, the things that were affecting the black community, but they weren't shooting each other. Earth, Wind, and Fire wasn't shooting at Kool and the Gang, who weren't shooting at Grand Funk, who weren't shooting at the Doobie Brothers, you know. It wasn't thuggery and gangs weren't elevated as something, you know, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I see rap and hip hop, a lot of it, especially that gangster stuff, as elevating the worst aspects of ghetto culture, pimping, whoring, drugs, guns, gangs, elevating that to, you know, to the top. And that to me is awful. I mean, one shouldn't forget where they came from. If someone came from the ghetto, I understand, you know, I didn't grow up poor, but I understand that. But I don't understand elevating that as something that, you know, the bad aspects as of something good, you know.
Yeah,
I think
that's done by the labels.
Well, you know, and I'm a big Frank Zappa fan. I love Frank Zappa. Now, Frank Zappa had dirty lyrics too, consistently, pretty much. But his there was more depth to his. There was thought behind it. It was funny, and there were still dirty lyrics, but it wasn't just the same. You know, just to say bitch or ass over and over, and you know, and think that's cool. I mean, it was way beyond that. So I wish these black artists would look to the past. Especially compositionally of the great black artists that you know preceded them, James Brown, B.B. King, Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know, all these great bands that I idolize and that I look to, and you know, because compositionally what they were writing was so great, and I'm not hearing that today. So, am I right? You're a musician.
Well, of course. In fact, we sort of collaborated on your theme song, at least for
right now.
And
yeah. But, you know, there you go. There you go. You have Quincy Jones ripping off the white man. That was a white group that, you know, Doobie Brothers wrote that song. Here we go again. Black artists ripping off white artists. When's it going to stop?
Well, actually, he was honoring that.
That's supposed to be a joke.
Yeah, I know. I got it.
Oh, okay.
But for those people that think you're serious out there.
Well, they'll have to get used to my dry sense of humor. But let them know, all people listening, that my music studio has, you know, photos of my black artists that I look up to, Sly and the Family Stone, all those greats that I've collected throughout the years. So that's my thing. I think Humble Pie said, like, one of their songs, my skin is white, but my soul is black.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well,
and I love that kind of music. So anyway, anything else?
Well, I think you should
care to pick my brain some more.
We still have a few minutes here. I think you should inform people of what you think you'd like to talk about on the next show, and give out any information you want to give out for contact or you know, invite him to come back here. Certainly,
yeah, well,
they can call into the show. I know.
Right. I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, I'll be here now thanks to your help and your connections and your encouragement. I'm lucky enough that I'll be here now every Monday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time, 12 midnight Eastern, and 11 p.m. Central.
Yes.
And then, of course, my show is immediately followed by your Evident Footprints.
Yes. Yes, that'll be on Mondays.
Yeah, so I usually speak, yeah, because you're on other days too, but for mine is Monday. And I usually like speak off the top of my head about these things, things that I'm interested in. But it's mainly about, history, economics, political science, some philosophy, and then, of course, music and my take on current events and especially foreign policy. And the gloves are off in many things. We need to talk about the Israeli lobby, that'll be coming up too, and its effect on America and our foreign policy. So I think that our listeners might like that. And as people get more familiar with me and what I'm trying to achieve, I hope I get more calls so we can have some interesting discussions and or debates and, you know, think about policy, where this country's headed.
Yeah, we have an election coming up in a week. And it's a pretty important one because it's a chance, it's an opportunity to clean house, literally and figuratively.
Well, we'll see. I wonder how the Republicans are going to govern afterwards, because they usually, you know, they usually go back to their big spending ways. They cut your taxes and spend like crazy.
Well, there's been a lot of ground gained as far as the corrupt manipulation of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And all of the diabolical draconian laws that have been enacted. You can't force somebody to buy in health insurance if they don't plan on getting sick.
Yeah.
You can't force them to have insurance for a car if they don't plan on driving.
Well, you know, government doesn't help us get our home insurance, our boat insurance, our motorcycle insurance, our home insurance. But, you know, they want to buy votes, which is what how Social Security was set up, too, way back. So this is a way to buy votes, too. You know, I like what I think it was H.L. Mencken who said that. I think you'll like this one if you haven't heard already. Elections are advanced auctions for stolen goods.
Yeah, I like what Frank Zappa says about politics.
What was
politics
that?
Politics is the entertainment branch of government.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, right. I like when he said something like America drinks and goes home, because a lot of Americans don't pay attention that much to what's going on. Now it's in their lap, and they still don't understand it that well. Well, I'm here to tell them that Austrian economics has a lot of the answers for this. It's not riddled with mathematics and computer models and economic forecasting. It's based on real-world issues, and especially sound money, and the fact that the entrepreneur is the center of society and entrepreneurs drive society. We need more Thomas Edisons, Henry Fords, Bill Gates. We don't need more politicians. We need more people who create wealth, not only for themselves, but others. So that's where I'm coming from. So you have a real staunch, principled libertarian, Ron Paul Republican here now. And I hope that I can, you know, have an effect on the world and our own country from my one small, brave voice.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the closing here, Fred, just to let you know.
Okay.
We've got about 2 minutes here before we've got to completely wrap. And
boy, it goes quickly. I'm glad that you were able to, you know, help me out a little bit on this. I appreciate your help.
Oh, you're doing fine, and you're going to do fine. And as time goes on, you're probably going to want to bring some guests on the show and certainly entertain some calls from the listeners.
Yeah,
And I can tell you the listeners here at bbsradio.com are very, very up to speed as to what's going on in the government. And they're also grounded in their faith. And they know that there are many solutions to problems that we can present in such formats as yours. So I'm looking
for
your future shows as well.
And the thing also, everything I advocate does not involve the desire to further tax or regulate anybody, nor would it take away any of their rights, the things that I am advocating. And, you know, and I'm advocating quite a bit, again, nullification and secession.
Yeah.
And on an intellectual level, which has nothing to do with racism or slavery or any of that nonsensical stuff that the left keeps bringing up.
Okay, Fred, you better say goodnight to your audience. You got less than 30 seconds.
Okay, I'd like to say, most of all, thanks again to BBS Radio for the opportunity. And most of all, I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in, and I bid you all a good evening, and thanks again to you, my friend Don.
You're welcome, Fred.
Good night, everyone.
I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.